slavery. That's the essential issue, says Rich DeVos, when it comes to the economic systems people live under. His overriding concern, which he shares with his audience and with you, is the need for a simple way to teach the basics of economics and free enterprise so that everyone can understand how the free enterprise system works and why it works so much better than any other economic system devised by man. On this cassette, he distills the basic principles of economics into a concise formula that holds the meaning for us all, a formula that controls man's material welfare. Rich DeVos.
As citizens of this country, of course, we are unique in that we live in a free society. And yet, when I listen to what's going on in the national scene, or you listen to people who are losing faith in institutions of government, who lose faith in business people, who, oddly enough, the latest surveys, of course, show that the only person lower on the scale of acceptability on the latest Gallup polls, lower than the business people, are the politicians. And I think that's encouraging. Because their concepts of what makes America run and how it works is almost unbelievably naive. Because as they found out with wage and price controls, they are convinced that they, of all people, know how to run this country better than anybody else. Here's how well they know how to run this country and handle your money. Senator Percy, who we were visiting with yesterday in Washington, was telling us that he has spent the last 7 years in the halls of Congress trying to get these men to understand that you should spend what you make. Because even up until this time, the way of budgeting the national budget is that everybody puts in what they want, and then they kind of sort it out, and then if the income is close, fine. If not, well, we voted it in anyway. Let us see what happens. And he has spent 7 years to where they're trying now to get a bill through which will force budget planning at the congressional level into one budget committee who will then finally look at the income versus the outgo, like all the rest of us have to look. Here's how your money is spent in Washington. They spent last year's budget $6,000 to look into the bisexual behavior of Polish frogs. They're spending $375,000 to determine if frisbees might be used to carry flares. They got $121,000 to find out why so many people say ain't. And they got $70,000 to conduct research in the smell of perspiration from the Australian Aborigines. Now, if you've never been there, you wouldn't appreciate that. $20,000 to study the mating calls of Central American toads. $70,000 to classify and determine the population biology of Indo-Australian ants. $20,000 to study the blood groups of Polish Zlotnicka pigs. $203,000 for the city of Los Angeles to extend travelers' aid to migrants who get lost on the freeways. And $19,000 to try to figure out why so many children fall off tricycles. Now, what I'm going to do with you here a little bit is a little work on economic education and try to get this thing down to a simplified form. Because the gist of what I really want to talk to you today is that we are in a fight for our life. I was in Washington yesterday and the day before. And in moving around and watching the forms of legislation, the type of control systems that you and I are under, if you and I don't find a way to explain the free enterprise system to the people of this nation, we are done. And right now, the majority of the guys down there are convinced that you and I are absolutely stupid ignoramuses and are unable to make intelligent buying decisions, and therefore they must make them for them. The message, therefore, that we must get out is to find some way to let the people of the world know what profits are and what free enterprise is all about. Now, here's an example for you. The Lord's Prayer has 56 words. The Lincoln's Gettysburg Address has 266. The Ten Commandments have 297. And the Declaration of Independence contains 300 words. But under the recent Price Control Commission, the order concerning cabbage prices contained 26,911 words to get a handle on the price of cabbages under the Price Control Commission. And they absolutely live in a foreign world, and there's only one thing they'll understand, and that's when you and I elect God-fearing men who understand some fundamental economics. The amazing thing to me, you see, and the reason we've been on this subject, the reason we call our company Amway, the reason we built a $3 million building, because we believe that the free enterprise system offers more for more people than any other economic system that's ever been put in the face of the earth. The growth of this country in 200 years has outperformed any other social or economic system that's ever been tried or tested. The United States of America and its free enterprise system has been able to share more wealth, give more money away than any other nation in history has ever been able to do before. Nobody else has ever touched us. We need not apologize to anyone. But what we must do is take a simplified way to train the people of this world, and primarily right now in this country, and elect men who understand it on how it all works. And it is so simple. In 68, when I went to New York, I purchased the exhibits from the American Economic Foundation for Amway, and we now have those housed in our Center of Free Enterprise. One of the prime exhibits in that building is called the Tree of Economic Knowledge. The development of this tree of knowledge and economics began with the idea that we must find a way to get economics simplified so that a seven-year-old can understand them, so that we can teach all people everywhere simplified economics so they'll support people who understand it and believe in it. And believe it or not, most of them don't understand it. We carry on a program of education in high schools today because virtually no high school in America today has any course on free enterprise economics. They don't even teach it. And the kids coming out of our school system today are a result of having no instruction whatsoever in the importance of the competitive system and why people do better. It's always interesting, you see, how when we are in high school, we have basketball teams, we have competitive sports, and we strive in our athletic endeavors to excel. And yet, when you get into the classroom with a social-minded teacher, suddenly excelling is wrong. It's better to be a mediocre loser than to be an outstanding performer. But if winning the game isn't important, then why keep score? But we do keep score in athletics. The Russians, who deny free enterprise as an economic system that really serves the people, yet spends great amount of effort competing internationally in the World Olympics, because competition is a basic thing that helps people perform better. And all those who would deny it deny a basic human trait that's within all of us. And yet that's the road we've been traveling. The Tree of Economic Knowledge, as I mentioned to you, was developed for simplified economics. This is simplified economics in its most fundamental form. MMW stands for man's material welfare. And if you and I learn this formula and share it with our children, with our friends, wherever you are, you can conduct the most unbelievable economic education job that the people in this nation have ever seen. And it will become a part of your sales package, or you will not be in business one of these fair days. It's just that simple. They will legislate you right out of work, or control you right out, either way. Now, MMW, man's material welfare. I'm not disinterested in his spiritual welfare, as you can gather. I'm very concerned about his spiritual welfare. The fact of the matter, however, is we're not talking about that right now. That doesn't mean we're not concerned with it. It just says, let's talk straight economics. This isn't Democratic or Republican. This is just straight, honest economics, regardless of your politics, regardless of your religious beliefs. Man's material welfare is equal to what? It is equal to natural resources plus human energy. That's all there is to it. Natural resources are everything we have on the earth. God put it all right there. Everything you and I see, feel, touch, live, and enjoy and eat come right out of the earth. Those are the natural resources. It was all there. The house you live in was made from timber which grew on the earth. The wire inside this cord is a piece of copper which comes from the copper mines of Chile or who knows where. The light on this material up in here, the lights comes from little pieces of bimetallic metal strips. They come from glass, which comes from sand. My shoes come from animals, which come from the earth. The floor comes from more of those trees. This aluminum, if it is aluminum, comes out of bauxite, which comes out of the mines of Jamaica or any other various parts of the world, much of which is in Africa. Natural resources, everything you have. The clothes you wear comes from cotton, which grows on the earth. It's a synthetic fabric. It comes from petroleum derivatives, which come out of the earth. The cars you drive come from iron ore, which comes out of the earth, and somebody else changed it and forms it, and we bump it and make it into pieces of metal, and we get an automobile. Fantastic. Simplified economics. Everything economically that we have, use, enjoy comes out of the earth. Simple, isn't it? Think about it. The glasses I wear, the clothes I wear, the food I eat, the car I drive. All laying right there. We combine the natural resources with human energy. Human energy is in two forms. It's both mental and it's physical. One man, through his mental energy, devised a system whereby you could get the iron ore out of the ground and melt it down through huge furnaces and pour it into sheets of metal. And somebody else developed systems to turn that metal into stainless steel, rolled steel, and created the machinery and the equipment in his mind. He was able to use that side of his talent to convert these natural resources into various usable forms. Somebody else in the South found a way to make the peanut more productive. He didn't do it all, but through his mental genius, he devised new ways to use this product more effectively to serve more people. Human energy, mental and physical. The physical side is the guy who digs the ore, or the fellow who fashions the fenders, or forms the car. The combination of human energy plus natural resources gives us everything we have in man's material welfare. Anybody can understand that. A young child can understand that. The socialists have it. The communists have it. It's common to all economic systems. The Arabs have all sorts of natural resources right now. And with a combination of some of the human energy and intelligence that came from this country, they combined that into producing oil wells. And says, oh, what are we going to do? We don't have any raw oil. You know, 50 years ago, we didn't even have an engine that needed oil. So for 1950 years, it didn't make any difference. What will we do? We'll find some other source of energy. We'll find a better way to make it happen, just like we found a better way, because a man will use the creative genius he has up here to find a better way. That's why we're not walking. That's why we ride where we go, because somebody used his mental human energy to find a better way. And whenever the need is there, men find better ways by using that form of energy to find us more economical, a more efficient method of doing these things. And that's the great ingeniousness that keeps working all the time in these systems. That's why we listen to the government planner. He thinks the world died today and stopped right here. He thinks the world's a static thing. He doesn't conceive that 20 years from now, most of the products you and I have in use today, we won't even be able to get anymore, because we'll have new and better ones. Just like 20 or 50 years ago, a man could hardly have conceived that we'd have ribbons of highways all across the land and much less be flying in the sky at 500 and 600 miles an hour. They couldn't conceive of that. And so neither can you and I conceive of what the human energy can provide in those years ahead. Economic process, man's material welfare. Well, like I say, Russia's got natural resources. Russia's got human energy. All over Africa, they got lots of natural resources, tremendously talented human energy. You go in the northern parts of Australia, they got so much in natural resources over there, they don't even know what they have yet. I've flown over that country. We have an operation in Australia. Unbelievable how much of that land nobody's even walked across. When you look at the charts, the air charts, they don't enter this area. Nobody's ever gone through this part of the world. Or you're at a check station. If you go beyond that point, report in, because if you don't come back out in the next number of hours, they want to know where you're going and what happened to you so they can follow you. And in that section of Australia, tremendous reserves. A while back, we were up on the Amazon River in a town called Manaus. There's no road to Manaus. You've got to fly there, or you can take the steamship from the ocean. It's 1,200 miles up the Amazon River to Manaus, but Manaus is a city of 300,000 people. And they have only begun to discover the wealth that's in the land around Manaus. And that's all I say to you. Natural resources and human energy are not special benefits of the United States, as we're finding out with economic trade systems around the world, that we have to learn to get on with each other in these matters. But natural resources and human energy don't make socialism worse than capitalism. The last one does. Because you see, the last word is T. And so if MMW is equal to NR plus human energy, this is a plus. But the multiplication comes with the T. Because you see, T stands for tools. And the difference between economic systems is in the tools. And so you want to talk to your 10-year-old and talk to him about why is free enterprise better than socialism, you can go through it real quick and say, well, it's all over, and who's going to own the tools? And it isn't just a question of the tools, it's a question of who's going to own the tools, that's all. The communist system has tools. Russia has huge farm tractors. And so do all communistic and socialistic systems. The question is not whether you're going to have the tool, the question is who is going to own the tool. And the difference between those economic systems is one. The free enterprise system that we know in the United States of America says the people of the land can own the tool. And in the socialistic, communistic system, the state says the state will own the tool. That's the difference, economically, between the two systems. Isn't that neat? Isn't that something? Now, let's just develop the tool aspect a little bit. While we were in Peru a while back, I watched a man. He was the lumber truck, and he walked like this. And when he went to the lumber yard, they loaded him up, and he paddled off. In fact, when I talked to him, he talked like this, because I doubt if he could straighten up anymore. You see, that society hasn't discovered tools yet. They are still beasts of burden themselves. So the man is the tool. When I move a load of goods, I put it on a truck, and it moves out at 55 miles an hour and goes across the country with one man sitting there in comfort. What is the difference? Is my driver better than that dear old soul in Peru? Why, no. My man has a tool. The other man has no tool with which to work. And so the absence of tools keeps the people in a state of bondage. And the growth economically of this country and the world began when we discovered that we could put a tool into the hands of a man and make him 5 and 10 and 100 times more productive. We run an aerosol plant out here at Ada. I remember when I set the line up the first time, Jay and I went out and ran it. I'd take one can, I'd get over here and get a little liquid in it, see how it went. Then I'd put the cap on it, and I'd creep it, and that would get squeezed on it. Then I'd put it over here, and the gas would go in it. And then I'd put the little tip on it, and I'd set it in a little rack over here. But you see, we used to get 1 or 2 or 3 a minute. But my aerosol line today produces 4 aerosol cans a second. They come out at the rate of 200 to 240 a minute. And it's just a blur. And that's not a high-speed line, incidentally. The Gerber lines up at Fremont run at 600 in some lines, and others run at 1,200 baby food jars a minute. You can't visually see them or distinguish them as they move through these production facilities. And again, I say, are those people who work at Gerber so much better than the man someplace else who fills a jar and screws the top on? No. He was given the tool. When a man receives a tool or a woman does, two things happen in a free society. When the tools are owned by the people, they are always used more effectively, and they always last longer because you take better care. Don't think that's true? Rent your house and see what it looks like a year from now. What's the difference? Oh, you think that's funny? Rent a house from someone else and you see how it looks after you live in it for a year. And I guarantee you, it will not look like it did when you moved in, or like it would if it was your own. You just don't take care of things the same way. We're coming into Los Angeles, or out of Los Angeles, one foggy morning a couple months ago, trying to get on the freeway early in the morning. Freeway's all jammed up. Said the guy's driving. I said, cut in, John. It's a rental car. And John says, hey, I heard your talk. I said, really proves the point, you see. When you don't own it, baby, you don't take the same kind of care. And that's exactly the problem Russia has with the whole system. They said the tools are owned by all all the people. That's right. That's why nobody takes care of them. I have a son. He's 18. He keeps his car in the garage. My car there, my wife's car there. I got another car there. He washes his car. I said, Dick, we all live in this commune together. You know, you ought to wash all the cars. He said, Dad, that's my car. I said, I understand. And I noticed that when it became your car, you drove more slowly when you pulled up. And that's the other side of it. When you own it, you take better care of it. And when you have it, you don't abuse it, so you get more productivity out of it. And those are the two things the communists have never quite figured out. And that's why they're trying to build economic incentive systems into their socialistic communistic system to get more productivity. Merely a recognition of what we understand, although we've gone all the way. We let the people own the tool of production. You don't like our system? I say to young people, you don't gotta stay here. You can be a citizen of the United States and live in a complete socialistic system. I said, you're demonstrating it for me. You're telling me that's what you want. I said, I got it for you. He says, where? I said, join the army. So he says, I don't want to join the army. He says, you, they might send me to Vietnam. I said, I understand. That's the rest of the story always. Whenever you want the government to take care of you, then they own you. And the United States Army is a complete microcosm of a socialistic system within the United States and available to all who'd like to join it. They'll feed you, they'll house you, they'll take care of your babies, they'll buy your glasses, they'll give you your false teeth, and they'll lay you away. What do you give up for it? Just your freedom. No big deal. When the young people were demonstrating a few years ago, said, power to the people, power to the people. But they were demanding government to take over certain functions. I thought, you guys are all screwed up. You got it all totally backwards. Power to the people means the opposite of power to the government. But they never understood that message, you see. And that's the same group who keeps demanding, Washington, you got to do something. The T always gets into the F. Because the trade-off is always when the state owns the tool, then ultimately the state owns the people. Now this is a message, ladies and gentlemen, you and I got to make sure some people understand, because that's just how simple it is. Free enterprise says you and I can own the tools of production. Owning the tools of production leads to and protects personal freedom. Throughout all of history, every time the state took control of the tool, the people go to slavery. And so it's not really, you see, a battle between free enterprise and socialism. It's really a battle between freedom or slavery. Which do you choose? When Fidel Castro took over in Cuba, he marched in and said, hey, boys, we are finally rid of that dirty scoundrel, that capitalist pig Batista. We now own the ranches. We own the plantations. We own the cane. We own the refineries. We will move forward together. And some of the young people said, if you don't mind, Fidel, I don't like to cut the cane. Fidel says to brothers, forward we go, cut the cane. And you don't really go for it. You ever cut cane? I tell you, that's the worst job in the world. Some of you guys, I don't like to cut the cane. Fidel, it's very simple. You will either cut the cane or you will go to jail. Pick your choice. And in the twinkling of an eye, the great socialist schemer discovered the price he paid, which was the absolution of his personal freedom. And so Cuba became a slave state, as it remains to this day. As you know, then, the Mercy flights went to Cuba every day. Every morning, a good old DC-6 took off from Miami and flew to Havana. Every morning, he loaded on 100 people. That ran on for 4 years. And finally, Fidel saw all the best people leave. And finally, he stopped the flight and said, no more. And those who left without a penny. They turned anything over they had to the state, and they walked out with a shirt on their back and their pants, and that's all. They couldn't even take a ring out or a watch. It was turned over to the government. But they waited in line for years for the right to leave with nothing, as opposed to live in that state of slavery. They still keep the wall around Berlin. It's not to keep us out. It must be to keep them in. Solzhenitsyn got out, but they're killing off the guys who stayed behind him and who were playing games with him. Solzhenitsyn had become so well known they didn't dare shoot him. But the rest of the men will disappear forever. because they can't permit a state of freedom to exist in those societies. And so the Berlin Wall remains a reality as the people stay in a state of slavery. And so this simple message of who will own the tool is one that must go forth to all people. And then you and I will know why, and then you'll know why at least I spend so much time being concerned about making sure economic education goes forth. Because the socialist schemer has you believing that, well, if we just do this, we're going to help the poor people. But he must know in the back of his mind that the ultimate goal he's seeking is the destruction of the freedom of all the people. Talked to a man the other day, fellow in our business, been to China. And he talked about the absolute disciplines of the Chinese people. He said, never seen anything like it. He said, I left my camera laying on the car seat when I got back. It was there. He said, absolute honesty. He said, in fact, I left it overnight in the car. And the next morning, the guy came back and said, here's your camera. He said, I couldn't believe how well orderly it was, how they all stood in line wait for the bus. Didn't have any cars, but they all had their bicycles. Disciplines, he said, were unbelievable. I said, why? How did they gain this kind of discipline out of 800 million people? Oh, it was very simple. They killed 40 million in the process. And when you kill 40 million people, you get some discipline. At least of the 40 million. That's the story that hasn't come out of China, you see. And the average Chinese says, oh, but I'm doing so much better, I got a little house. At this point, he may have a little more bread on his table. But the human soul, wanting to be free, will sooner or later begin to erupt in China. As the people begin to discover the trade-off they made, which was a loss of all personal freedom, to a point to where young ages of children are taken away from them and put into the commune, and they no longer have an involvement with them. That's the battle that's going on throughout the world. It's a battle that's going on within this country. We have a hospital drive on in Grand Rapids. New hospitals are being built because people care. And while the socialists would tell you that the average capitalist is selfish and self-centered, that is a lie. And that is why, as much of our material wealth was given out through the Red Cross or agencies of mercy throughout the world, there was never a demonstration in Washington for what we gave away because we cared or tried to help another person. All we ever talk about is the abuse of our system, but not about the basic concept of programs that go out in mercy and love for another person to help people of the world. There is no demonstration in Washington against foreign aid. There wasn't for many, many years, and we poured it out in the Marshall Plan. We helped rebuild Japan. We gave of our wealth. Why? Because we had a factory that generated wealth. And when the factory generates wealth, then it is able to perform acts of mercy. And that's what the socialist type could never understand. And he says, no, we will administer the welfare. But in his administering of the welfare, he will destroy the system, so there is no economic prosperity to be shared anyway. And that's why under all those systems it goes. Under Cuba, by the way, under Fidel Castro, Cuba's gross national product is now down another 11% this past year. In other words, your productivity keeps dropping, dropping, dropping. In the 4 years or so that Allende was in power in Chile, by the time the military acted to overthrow the Allende government, prices had soared more than 1,000% in 2 years. Even under absolute control, like the communists exercised in Chile, they couldn't control the prices. In 2 years, and we're climbing at the rate of 3% a day. At the very end of that regime, the national treasury was practically empty. The Allende government had spent its $400 million in foreign exchange reserves. It had borrowed some $800 million more, mainly to import food. After the regime's attempts to build something resembling a state farm system led to a drastic drop in agricultural production. It goes on in this article to talk about the Dow chemical plant and how it finally ended up. Here's a little bit of that story. Bob G. Caldwell, Dow's Director of Operations for South America, was a member of the technical team that went into Chile to try and get some of their plants operating again. This is what he found. Mr. Caldwell says the government added 100 new people to Dow's original workforce of 250. Our workers were well trained, but their morale collapsed. Some of them tell us they tried to do their jobs, but the others held political meetings most of the time until finally they gave up and joined them. Production dropped to only 30% of capacity. And by the time they got back after 4 years, to illustrate the point, the plant was almost beyond recovery. Because since nobody owned it, nobody took care of it. And the plant was in a state of absolute breakdown to where it could hardly function anymore. And all the people were now busy worrying about their political indoctrination. And nobody was working anymore. And that's why you couldn't get food. That's why towards the end of the Allende regime, all the shelves in a grocery store were empty. Because nobody was working. And since nobody in the country owned the tools, nobody really cared. It was all going to come from the government on high. And so the complete collapse set in economically in the country, which finally caused the change in the political structure. But what an awful price to pay, and what a hard way to get there. And yet, I say to you, the United States of America is traveling that road. And day by day, there are people who would have you go there. And they don't understand that when the people own the tools, they use them better, and they last longer. And they yell about profits, and most don't understand it. Average corporate profits in America are less than 5% on sales dollars. And they tell me that if the government ran it, they could get rid of that profit and give it back to the people. But the government's sloppiness and efficiency or inefficiency of operation is so atrocious that all that can happen is the escalation that took place in Chile. Because government operations are atrociously poorly handled. Why? They have no direct accountability. You see, there's no stockholder standing there to say how you do it, or no wife at the door to say, how did you do today? What are we going to eat tonight? You see. And so when that transference of power takes place, I'm not a prophet of doom. I'm a great believer in the power of the people of America. I believe that they are where they are through a series of events that have occurred which have kept us ignorant, and through the quiet indwelling of certain violent forces who would do us in and are gradually trying to undermine us and tell us this system doesn't work. But we do have the highest standard of living the world has ever known. A few other statistics for you on where we stand economically. You still stand in line at 5 o'clock in the morning in Russia to try and get a sofa, incidentally. You don't argue about the color or the design, you just take what comes. The furniture factory gets 12 a day. And I read about the one lady who went there every morning for 6 weeks and got riled at 5 in the morning every morning before she finally was there on time to get one. And that's why they still stand in line to buy potatoes. And that's why they still walk everywhere. And that's why they still live in apartments, because they're all owned by the government. And that's why they share johns at the end of the hall. Because that's what somebody has decreed for their life. A few things on the growth of this country come down. Between 1953 and 1973, per capita personal income in the United States rose 173%. From $1,799 to $4,921. In that same period, Labor Department figures show the consumer price of a car increased 15%. Unbelievable. When the people own the tools, this is what happens. Personal income up 173%. Price of the car up 15%. Apparel items were up 50% and household furnishings were up 36%. What do these percentages mean? Good use of the tools, proper use of the tools. 20 years ago, a 10.6 cubic foot refrigerator cost $509. That's for a 10 cubic footer, $509. Today, you can buy a 20 cubic foot model, complete with freezer, for less than $400. Tools owned by the people, fantastic results. Consumer can buy a 10,000 BTU room air conditioner for about $175. 20 years ago, that unit cost an average of $425 and used almost as twice as much electricity. And so while we have inflation, let's don't panic on the subject. Our increase in productivity when the government kept its hands out and allowed the people to use the tools the way they chose to has led us to the highest standard of living the world has ever known. And so your choice and mine is very simple. We are either going to carry this message or end up in slavery. And so you must swing all those people who want to argue with you on the social issue to the ultimate decision that results. Which do you choose? Freedom or slavery? Those are the only choices. And I just thank God that I was born in a land where I had a chance to be free, and where all the rest of the world stands in envy and awe and would literally do anything in their power to be where we are. But you and I must stand for it and fight for it and talk about it like we never did before. Thank you for letting me share our thoughts with you today.